League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Quick shot, score! The U.S. with Dempsey!
Turn it up! Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters as we roll on here tonight. A great opportunity to catch up to the Houston Dynamo sporting director. He is the one and only Asher Mendelson. He joins us now. Asher, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a while for us, but I'm glad to have you on tonight.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's first just get a little synopsis of where we are. Here we are, Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup champions, qualified for the playoffs. You've hit some big watermarks here. Did you think it would come together this quick this season?
I think what we felt really good about in this last offseason is that we were building a foundation and we were bringing people into the building who had experience in the league and who had experience winning inside and outside the league. You never really know how fast some of these things come together. And to be fair, in a tournament like the Open Cup, you know, we get a couple different bounces against Tampa and we're out in the first round. So there's an element of chance to a tournament, a single elimination knockout tournament. So I think things went our way in that tournament. I think there's, in terms of where we are in the playoff standings, I think that's a little closer to what we were hoping for, which is that we are playing meaningful games right into decision day. And that's the case. I think that's what we wanted. The Open Cup is obviously something that we're very proud of, but I think that is ahead of what our schedule was.
Asher Mendelson joining us, sporting director of the Houston Dynamo. I'm excited to talk to you tonight. Watching this team this year, it has been a pretty remarkable kind of story, as you guys defining your purpose of play, adding some players that come in at the right time that enhance things, some players emerging at certain times. The League Cup, it seems, turns out to be something very beneficial to you guys. Take me into some of that, because I'm not sure the rest of the country, looks at it maybe as deep as everybody locally here. They are finding out about the team. They're getting on the bandwagon now. But, there was all these really interesting little subtle things, at least from the outside that I saw, that helped shift this into a different direction.
Sure. Yeah. Well, first, we have plenty more seats on the bandwagon and everybody's welcome. So they can come on board. It's great. But to kind of walk you through, I think, when we pick up the narrative that we were talking about earlier in the season, this last offseason was transformative for the sporting side of our club. We brought in, in the end, we brought in 17 new players for our first team, 15 new staff members for our first team. We did more player moves in and out than St. Louis did this last offseason. So in a lot of ways, we were an expansion team, where we had a lot of new built people in the building. And it took some time, and it took really the first half of the season for our group to normalize and for our group to work on their identity, to build the relationships and figure out which ones were really strong and bore fruit on the field, to figure out what was the right combination of people to have on the field. And really, when you look at the first half of our season, there are some very key turning points that we saw, which is, in the beginning, we were having a hard time generating chances from the run of play. And, we were doing very well in set pieces and particularly in penalties. And we were very, very strong defensively. But we knew we weren't getting enough. We weren't stretching the field enough, you know. And then so, you know, we went out and we brought in a player like Ibrahim Aliyu, which that's his specialty. Nelson Quiñones began finding his form, and he worked his way onto the field. He helped stretch it, helped stretch the field. And then, you know, and then we were getting a lot of penetration on our left side, and our forward is stretching the line, you know, and then we're realizing we're a little bit, our attack's a little imbalanced. You know, Griffin Dorsey becomes healthy again. He becomes inserted into the right side. Now we have penetration on the right side as well. And then you saw our attack really come together, and you started seeing the offensive output we've had, you know, really, you know, since the League's Cup began. And a lot of the success we've had has been really the evolution of our group. And a huge credit to Ben Olsen and his staff for guiding that process, and really bringing this team to life.
Asher Mendelson joining us, Houston Dynamo sporting director. MLS, you guys are certainly cognizant. It never seemed like you panicked in the beginning, because MLS is forgiving in a way that you can take your time to kind of build this. It seems as though you're timing this perfectly with momentum, confidence, and the understanding of how a coach and a staff and the players want to play.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I'll go back and I'll keep singing his praises probably for our entire time. But, you know, Ben Olsen is a fantastic man manager, and he has a really good understanding of our league and of what the season is like, and, you know, really understanding kind of when to hit the gas and when to hit the brake, you know, how to keep the group together, you know, especially through the long summers that happen in our league that you see a lot of teams, you know, sputter out. He's done a really nice job of managing this group and managing the individuals in this group. And again, bringing this team to life, which is really what this last year has been. You know, it's, I know, you know, from the outside, it looks like, okay, let's throw a bunch of names on a sheet and, you know, play fantasy football or fantasy soccer, you know, and then the output should be, you know, the sum of those parts. But the reality is, you know, this is about managing people and creating relationships that make the sum greater than the parts. And really, that's a huge credit to Ben and the rest of his staff, you know, for creating that unity within our group, but also refining what our soccer looks like and figuring out what our group needs, you know, to be successful.
Asher, if we go back to the beginning of the year, speaking of Ben, obviously the team is presented in a more narrow way in the beginning, very tight. I think to your point, good defending from the word go. Obviously, the possession game goes up with the likes of Artur brought in. I mean, what a season he's having, Herrera. But he makes a bold decision, you know, that we need a different type of striker in this system. Nothing against Sebas Ferreira, who is a 13-goal scorer. But that's a bold decision, in my opinion. And you know, I think there were a lot of people skeptical about it. How is it going to work? And ultimately, it looks like it's working pretty well, but it is bold decisions I think the club needed at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's where you trust a coach who's been in the league as long as he has, and you know has had a lot of success in the league. You know, he frequently was managing one of the lowest spends or lowest, you know, finance rosters in the league, and he made the playoffs 6 out of 10 years. You know, so he understands how these seasons work. And for him, you know, when he's looking at figuring out what it needs, both in terms of tactically, but also just collectively, and that unity we talked about, you know, you trust him. And when he has a strong feeling about it, Sebas had a good year last year. He had a very good year last year. You know, and he's a good pro. And you know, it's a hard decision, but again, it's one that Ben felt strongly about, and Pat and I backed him.
Asher Mendelson joining us tonight. And of course, you and Pat, a lot of decisions have to be made. And I do want to take you into the assembling of your staff with Ben Olsen and kind of how that works, because I know a lot of those guys don't get a lot of the attention. They're behind the scenes. They're doing tremendous work. Let's start with Brendan Burke. When you put this staff together and you're working with Ben on creating a collective staff, which is very vital, they never get the credit that they deserve. But, like, are you looking at, okay, we get this kind of strength with Brendan Burke. We get this with Aurelien Collin. So let's start with Brendan Burke and what he brings to the table and maybe where his strengths and expertise is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few areas. I mean, first and foremost, we were looking for someone to come in and help Ben run and really take ownership of the training sessions. And don't get me wrong, Ben's out there and he's overseeing the training, but somebody who's in the office planning the exercises, planning exactly what each player is doing in that exercise, and then working on the durations with our high performance staff and with Paul Caffrey. And that's where Brendan has is a great, you know, what they call a field coach. And he's got a lot of experience in that. We felt very comfortable with him taking on that role. But with Brendan, he also has these added benefits of he's been part of a lot of winning teams. So you go back to, okay, what was one of our, you know, what was one of our first principles in trying to bring people into the building this last offseason? It was who's been there before, who's done it, right? And, you know, he's done it at a number of different levels. You know, he's done it in the USL at the lower levels when it was Reading. He did it, you know, in his time in Philly and specifically, you know, working with some of the youngsters in Philadelphia. And he did it out in Colorado Springs where he was, you know, the head coach and the general manager. So he's worn a lot of different hats, but success has tended to follow him everywhere he's gone. And so we also felt very comfortable that he would bring that competitiveness and that desire to win into our building. And then the last part is that what I touched on a little bit, which is his experience in developing young players, because that's really been, you know, his forte and where he's lived, you know, throughout his career, which is how do we take these budding prospects, turn them into pros? We also liked having that in the building. That's part of what we aim to become. We're not there yet, but we want to be a club that can nurture young talents and develop them into full-time pros that can play at even higher levels than what we can provide.
Asher Mendelson joining us. So did you guys kind of go after and target him? Did it come the other way? How does that happen?
No, we absolutely went after him, just to be clear. We knew we had an idea of, just like with any position, we have a list of candidates. You know, we look at people from a variety of different backgrounds, but he was absolutely on that list. He comes highly recommended from the guys in Philly who he's worked closely with and who we have a lot of respect for. And when we brought him in and we talked to him, you know, he lived up to our expectations, and we think he's been a really good fit here, and he's added a lot of value. He's been a big piece of what we built.
Paul Caffrey, you mentioned Aurelien Collin, Tim Hanley. There's more staff members. I know. I don't want to be disrespectful here, but I want to keep it moving on because I don't want to go through each one. You're the sporting director. As much as you want to live in the now, you also have to live in the future. So, you know, I've seen reports that Pat Onstad was in Europe. Talk about how you keep an eye on the prize right now, but also have to foreshadow out, constantly look at this roster, constantly look at areas that may change based on contracts. I mean, all these other things that come into play for a sporting director.
Yeah. So one correction, I'm a technical director, which is a subtle
title. Okay. So this is one I need to ask. Yeah. What is the difference between a sporting director and a technical director?
It's fair. A sporting director would be a little bit of a promotion from what I'm doing now. So that's the only reason why.
See, I'm already moving you forward. So come on. You should be on my side here.
The sporting director and general manager are somewhat synonymous. So those terms are used to represent the same role depending on the club. A technical director is a little bit more synonymous with an assistant general manager. So, that's the only reason why I wanted to correct you.
Well, not only did I just learn something, I think all my listeners did too.
Okay. But to answer your question about, how do we balance the now and especially, you know, as intensive a now as we're in right now, you know, where we just finished a stretch of 7 games, we wrapped up our Open Cup with a trophy. We clinched the playoffs. We're playing games every 3 or 4 days. It was hectic, but at the same time, the coaches have to live, you know, they're in the arena, you know, Ben's in the arena every day. And he's got to be thinking about what's going on the next day and the next game and preparing for the game after that. And that's about it, the scope of his vision, you know, because it is so intensive. And it does require that level of focus. You know, the luxury that Pat and I have is that we can enter into the arena with him at times and be there and be in this intense process. But we have a responsibility to take a step back as well, look at things from a 30,000 foot level, look at next season, look at the season after next season. And so, you know, if we started our planning for next year when this year ended, we would be behind our colleagues, you know, in the rest of the league. And, you know, it's a huge advantage to be an incumbent staff, to be in our the seats that we're in and be able to use August and September and October to be planning for next year versus the staffs that turn over and they're scrambling from day one. And I can say that because Pat and I were in those seats a year ago, and it's a it's a real challenge. And so, you know, we have a plan. Depending on how the season goes, we know there are different variations of what that plan could look like. But we're planning, we're working against all of those contingencies, and so we're ready to go as soon as our season is over, which is hopefully, you know, in mid December.
So is that plan based on what happens on the field, even down to singularly positionally?
Yeah, I mean,
change because of that.
Yeah, there's a number of factors that go into play. The more success we have, the harder it is to keep a roster together. That's just, you know, that's a maxim in a salary cap league. You know, the more success we have, the more interest from abroad there will be in some of our players, and we may get offers that we can't turn down. For players that we would love to keep, but if the right offer comes in, you know, it helps. It's good for the player. It's good for the club that we have to accept it. So the success bring, you know, if we have, depending on what level of success we have from here, it could lead to different, you know, outlooks of what our team looks like next year. You know, we months ago have already started the planning for some of those contingencies. That's a healthy place to be in, and you know, model we always look to, and where we look to, because they do it incredibly well. You know, as if you look in the Premier League and you look at a club like Brighton, you know, that I know they're not winning the Premier League trophy, but the process of already having in mind replacements for just about every staff member they have, as well as every player, so that when those opportunities present themselves, they can be in a position where they can help people move their careers on without hurting the club. And that's ultimately what we aspire to have in place here, where it's hard to see some of your favorite players go, you know, from a fan standpoint. And I get that and I respect that. But it's also you're running a healthy club when someone has success and you can, you know, you can help them get to their next level and achieve what their ultimate career ambitions are and not have it hurt our club. And that's what we're hoping to build here.
All right, so that's part one with Asher Mendelson, the Dynamo technical director. We appreciate him joining us here tonight. We got part two right around the corner. Before we hit a break, though, I just want to remind you about John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They are our presenting sponsors. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. You want the best if you need a personal injury attorney. It is the Daspit Law Firm. Car, boat, motorcycle, maritime. You get in an accident working construction or driving an 18-wheeler. You need the best in the business. The best in the business is John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. We'll take a break, part two. Asher Mendelson, technical director, Houston Dynamo, coming up next.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Quick word here for our great friends at Hugh O'Connor's Pub. Get out there, see David, see Goose. They've got the best in whiskey offerings, an incredible beer offering, steak night. This is an authentic soccer, football-type pub. Of course, they show all sports out there, including the Astros and the Texans. But this is a place where you can go and really feel the vibe of being a football fan. Liverpool supporters group home as well. It is Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Hugh O'Connor's Pub. with winning, playing well. I think people are lauding your aesthetics. I have been all year long because it's just been a very unique, very different playing style that we've seen in Houston, one that I think fits the market beautifully. But with all the attention comes people wanting your players, people wanting your staff. I have to mention this because you have been mentioned in D.C. as a potential general manager by my friend Stephen Goff. Is there anything you can say about that? Because as you are successful, people are looking at you.
Sure. I mean, you know, we look at our staff just like we're looking at our players. You know, and I had an old boss who once said, you know, I love what I'm doing. This is a great job. But if someone came to me and said, you know, you get to go run Man United and we'll pay you £10 million a year to do it, I'm probably gone tomorrow. And I mean, there's a reality of where we are in our, you know, where we are in our ecosystem, in the world ecosystem, excuse me, of football. You know, where opportunities present themselves that are hard to turn down. Having said that, I'm completely focused right now on the Dynamo and where we are right now in our season and planning for future seasons. And, you know, I'm very happy here. My family is very happy here. It would take a lot for me to leave.
Griffin Dorsey. This to me is one of the big stories of the year. I think fundamentally he's helped you play a very different way. I think teams are fully aware of what he brings from a wide area and have to make adjustments to deal with him. I think we've seen that pretty vividly, even from a man named Tata Martino and Inter Miami. Just talk about his development because, listen, we all know he can go box to box. We all know the physical capability. But the thing, and I've had him on the show, that really is remarkable to me is how much more polished he looks. Now, I know a lot of that is based on his desire, his work ethic, but I also know your staff has had to have worked with him. Just take us into him and how fundamental he has been to a lot of the success right now taken off from the League's Cup.
Well, first, I mean, what a great story, right?
Unbelievable.
I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, the American player, and, you know, we like to think that there's one path that everybody takes. And everyone's, you're either Tyler Adams and Christian Pulisic or, you know, or you're not. And, you know, and you can never, but the reality is we have such an interesting ecosystem here in the youth soccer ecosystem and developmental ecosystem that people take a variety of different paths. And, you know, Griffin is, you know, he possesses something that, that's the number one thing I would tell any young player. If you want to make it, is you have to, you know, Griffin is one of the best examples that you can have of it, which is somebody who is absolutely determined to be successful and will do everything in their control to make that happen. And when adversity comes, you know, as did with him this early this season, when he took an injury in preseason, you know, a lot of people would have cratered a lot of people, and he just went back to work. I mean, you know, it was hard for him. It's a difficult thing, but you know, you didn't see it on his face when he came into training the next day. You know, he just has a dogged determinism that he's going to be successful. And, you know, and you hear from the different pros that we have in our locker room, you know, who respect that act, whether it's a Hector or an Eric Shevchenko, you know, guys who have been around, they've seen a lot of players around the world, you know, and they point to him as saying, you know, what he has, that type of motivation special. And if we could bottle that up and give it to every young American player, man, I wouldn't want to play us in the World Cup in 2030. Yeah. But you talk about his path, you know, specifically. And
technical side, like, he was getting into good areas based on his physicality, but he looks like a better defender. He's more polished. He's timely with what he does. The precision of delivery has gotten better, and it gives people a chance. He's cutting in left. He's scoring goals cutting in on his left. He's scored one cutting in on his right. I mean, to me, it really is a remarkable just advancement from that aspect.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, it's interesting about his story, and I think it's people have picked up on this in the past. I've heard it in other outlets is, you know, he came in as a wide attacking player. That's what he played in college, and that's what he originally was trying to make it in MLS. 2 years ago, he came into the coaching office And, you know, he looked at our roster and we didn't have a lot of right backs last year. And he said, well, can I get a shot at that? I think that's an area where I could be good. And, you know, he worked on it over the course of the year. And I think when, you know, when Kenny Bundy came in toward the end of the year, we started pushing our fullbacks a little higher. And specifically, Kenny was working with him on how to be a little more effective going forward. And so you look at that influence. And then, you know, when he breaks back into the lineup here, he's playing next to a player as experienced as Eric Shevchenko, you know, who's played next to a lot of young players in his career, Michelin and Celtic. And now he's got someone on the field who's helping, you know, helping in his development on the field, you know, plus you have the work that, you know, Ben and Brendan Burke, you know, and Adin Osman-Bosic, you know, and Aurelien Collin are doing with him, you know, on the training ground every day, in the video every day. And those are things that Griff eats up. Like he's one of the first guys to ask for extra work, ask for feedback. Wants to look at video. He wants the feedback. He wants to learn. He wants to develop. And so I think it's this great blend of all these different influences that you've seen his maturation over the last 2 years, since we've been here. And right now he's, you know, he's playing at a really good level and fits really well what we're trying to do. So I think it's a great moment for him. Really happy for him because you love seeing guys who put in what he puts in have success. I mean, there's just someone, they're the types of people you root for.
And hats off to you and Pat Onstad for making these critical signings like Eric Shevchenko that, you know, Hector Herrera obviously came, Artur, but these are all guys that can make other players better. And I think it's incredibly obvious the influence that they have on the entire roster. Well, so let's talk about Hector and Artur. I mean, I think Artur has been spectacular. I think Hector's been spectacular. But what an axis to build off of, right? I mean, that's obviously what you guys had in mind with those two guys.
Yeah, and you know, I think Hector's had a fantastic year. You know, I'm not surprised. I think last year was difficult for him, and that's been well documented, and people have talked about it. I think it's for a whole variety of reasons. But, he came in this season completely refocused. You know, where this was his team. You know, he was going to be the leader of this team. We were building the game.
Can I stop you there? Is that something with a designated player, with that type of player, is that something you have to make sure, you know, he kind of owns that, he wants that? I mean, I've talked to my friend Efrain Flores, who gave him a start at Pachuca, and, you know, we were talking about Hector, and I said, oh, he's having a spectacular year. It's just so much fun to watch him play, the influence he has. But he is playing a role that, you know, he didn't play at Atletico Madrid. He's essentially your playmaker. I mean, he's your X factor. He's running the show. He's orchestrating it. I mean, it's just fascinating to watch. So it's important that you guys as a staff, like Hector, it's kind of your show. How much input do you get from him?
A lot. A lot. I mean, and some of it's you know, I think there's still a boundary between players and coaches and players and front office in terms of who, you know, decisions and that we make. But in the end, I mean, he's a huge part and a big driver of everything we do. And, you know, that was the intention when we brought him in here. That's why we brought him in here. You know, we brought him in partly for what he can do on the field, but also for again, that to lead that culture change that we're trying to create. And, you know, it was hard for him last year because he was one of the first guys here, you know, him and the Steve Clarks of the world, you know, they were the first guys in, and they had to live through some of the growing pains of that. You know, obviously we brought a much bigger number of those players in this year. But now, again, Steve and the incumbency of having been here and having this be their environment, to now assemble this group of people who've had success elsewhere and to help build a team. And so, you know, but with Hector, you look at a guy like him and his unique skill sets of being able to dictate the game from deep positions and really be a deep line playmaker. And that's where you start building out how this team is going to play, because that is one of our strengths. And so then you look at, okay, well, what else how do we bring those out? How do we bring out his strengths? And how do we complement some of the things that he needs some help with? And that's where Arturo was a really good complement to Hector and was the first guy we went after in this offseason to try to bring in to solidify that six role. And, you know, we knew Arturo from our time in Columbus with him. So it was a really safe, when I say safe bet, but it was someone who we felt really comfortable would help us on the field, but also help us off the field. I mean, Arturo is a fantastic leader. He's a great pro. He's a uniter. He brings people together. And someone who, you know, we think is really solidifies that foundation we were trying to build, you know, and then from there you start building out the rest of the midfield and you look at guys like Amin Bassi coming in, you know, the coaching staff.
And it took you guys a little while to figure out where his best area on the field was too. That was the other thing that was fascinating. We all saw that he was a very technical player, but it took you guys a while to kind of figure out how to alter your midfield and to get the best out of your players.
Yeah. And again, that's a credit to the coaching staff to evolve what we were doing into a 3-box-3 where we have a box midfield now. And now you're bringing out the strengths of our central midfield, which make it very difficult for us to play in. We saw glimpses of that against Dallas, even in the preseason, where that the overloaded midfield and the exchange of positions within that midfield made it very difficult for the opponent to follow, to get the ball back. But what we lacked in that game was penetration. And so again, that's been the evolution of this system that we've put, that the coaching staff has put together this year, which is, we felt like we had good possession from the beginning, but we needed to be a little more threatening going forward. And that's when you add in the Aliyus of the world and the Nelsons of the world, and even Corey Baird's maturation as a 9, 9.5. And now Griffin Dorsey playing as one of the fullbacks who can get forward and he can penetrate on the other side. And now you have possession with penetration, and that's makes us more dangerous.
All right. So those were the first two parts of a long, long interview with Asher Mendelson, the technical director of the Houston Dynamo. There will be a part three that will be put up bonus wise on ESPN 97.5. All right. So you can go over there and get the bonus interview. We'll also put it out on social media. So there is a lot more with Asher Mendelson. All right. Stay with us on the program. We'll take a break. When we come back, my great friend Tomas Escalante, he is the owner of Sig's Lagoon, a vinyl record shop in Houston, Texas. And along with Cactus, again, one of these great places to go pick up vinyl. But also they're both like museums. So coming up next, Tomas Escalante, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment of the night tonight here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. You know I like to go outside the box, and a lot of times we love to talk music with, obviously, people that know more about music than me. He is Tomas Escalante. He is the owner of Sig's Lagoon. It is an incredible vinyl shop right in Midtown, Midtown's only vinyl store. 20th year he has been in business running it. It is at 3622 Main Street. Tomas, thank you for coming on the show and helping us end it in big style tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, Glenn.
All right. Love your store. You know Quinn. You know Cactus.
Oh, yeah.
We're all in it together here in the vinyl community. But I love coming to your store and just seeing all the memorabilia. So the first obvious question here, what is on your turntable right now at home vinyl?
Actually, it's Devo, Freedom of Choice. A friend of mine just had his 50th birthday, and it's 50 years of Devo. So I am a Devo fan, and happy belated birthday to Mark Beebe.
Yeah, Devo's awesome. Did you like their cover of the Stone Satisfaction?
Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the best covers ever. I mean, they made it their own.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so tell us about Sig's Lagoon, how you became involved with it, and, you know, just give us some of the background on the store, because it is a really unique Houston store.
Oh, thanks. we've been open for almost 20 years. We're here in Midtown, in mid-Maine, Houston, next to the Continental Club. My background is I worked in a store in college called Sundance Records. Fast forward up to here we are today, and we kind of transformed what Sundance was into Sig's Lagoon. And everything on the walls was on and Sundance's walls. We since have reopened Sundance in San Marcos, to keep, my buddy who passed away, his spirit alive in San Marcos, and, his spirit's here as well. So, my wife and I both work there. And, so, you know, the store has quite a lifeblood in the Escalante family.
So did you and your wife meet over vinyl?
We kind of, she worked at a store in our hometown, Corpus Christi, called Craig's Record Factory. And, when I was moving here to start working at this music wholesaler, we passed each other in San Marcos and said, "Hey, go over there. The guys have a tie to this store." And we ended up talking to each other all the time. And, you know, 25 plus years later,
the rest is history. He is Tomas Escalante. It's Sig's Lagoon, 3622 Main Street in Midtown. Great record store. You know, you guys all seem to have, I feel, a camaraderie, right? Because, you know, you are kind of in a niche business, right? Vinyl and the revitalizing of vinyl. So, you know, Cactus, Vinyl Edge, Sig's Lagoon. Do you guys feel an esprit de corps amongst each other?
Absolutely. There's other stores as well. Sound Exchange. There's Sound Revolution up off 1960. We all know each other. We all, you know, focus on what we specialize in. We send business each other's way. And it's definitely a community. The vinyl community is definitely strong. And we're lucky that we have some great stores here in Houston.
Yeah. Take us into the strength of the vinyl community and, you know, where you see people getting back into it. How do you suggest they get back into it? If it's something they like, I just love the nostalgia for me of putting a needle to vinyl. It's as simple as that for me.
Yeah. It's great. Like yesterday we had a customer come in, it was his birthday, and all he wanted was a turntable and vinyl, and his parents kind of treated them well. But it's a treat to watch the younger generation with the older generation who had that same affinity for it and share that. So it's really, has its roots to bringing that sort of vibe back to the young crowd. And it's, I don't know. I like watching it and seeing like someone new getting into it again and watching the folks introduce it to them, and like their eyes lighting up, like, "I remember when this," you know, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, I was in Anton's record store in Austin, you know, cause I go up there a lot, and I got into this conversation with this younger guy, and, you know, it was pretty amazing because there was definitely a little bit of a generation gap, but then, you know, he'd start telling me about some record he was looking at right now. And then I'd tell him something about, and he was like, "Oh, really?" You know, that's cool. It's a way to bring people together, and it's a way to bring generations together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's, we see it daily here, and I know Quinn and Chuck and all of them see it the same way. It's fun, and it's kind of like, it keeps me going at times, like seeing that spark.
Sig's Lagoon, it's 3622 Main Street. Okay, tell us about the name, and then, you know, all the tiki influence. You got to help us with that, because when you go down there, there's a lot of things visually, much like Cactus, and, you know, these places are like museums, really.
Yeah, so the name comes from a book that was turned on to me by my late friend John Novolomax. So it's called Sig Birds Houston. And at the time, I was in a band called Clouseau. And so our first album ended up being Lagoon because of this book. And at the same time, I was kind of talking to the partners here at Mid-Maine about a store going. And I thought it was going to be a store that I could sell product to, because I was still working in music wholesale. And it turned out that it kind of fell through. And so I kind of picked up where they left off, and and kind of started that 20 years ago. So John turned me on this book called Sigbird's Houston, and it was about walking. It was written by this gentleman named Sigbird, who would walk around and write what he saw. And it was a compilation of articles that he wrote in the Post at the time. And lagoon was a term from the book there was a writing where this gentleman saw something and his response was lagoon, like cool. And so we did Sig's Lagoon. So, cause it's lagoon was like this little, little area with water around it and stuff. And it had the tiki vibes. I was in a tiki band at the time. So we kind of kept that vibe with it. And, it's kind of took its own from there.
That's a cool story. We're talking to from Sig's Lagoon. He is the one and only Tomas Escalante. By the way, Tomas has a soccer connection with a Bolivian background. Tell us about your dad and how he connected you to the great game of football.
Yeah, he turned me on to soccer when I was a kid. Went to Bolivia with him and played around. That was my first introduction to it, was just playing with some kids there. And I think I was like six at the time and came back. And then, of course, that's when the whole craze was the craze in the U.S. of like, wow, soccer games, kids are playing it and the leagues are forming. And so I was like, I kind of felt like I was ahead of the game at the time. Like, wow, I kind of have this in my background. So I was participating as a kid. And of course, Pelé, I was a fan of, like every kid was at the time. So I was lucky to have that introduction as a child and really excited that, Houston got a team again a while back and, they just won the Copa America, little tournament here. And so there's a lot of great things.
Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. We hope they can win the Copa America one day, but Lamar Hunt U.S. Open.
Oh, thank you for the correction.
Copa America is what Bolivia plays. By the way, I'm glad you brought up Copa America because it's likely Copa America is going to be in Houston next year.
I had it on my brain.
I think that's probably why you had it on your brain. So you did something amazing. I walked in your store one day and you handed me this, and I was fully expecting to pay for this, but you made this a gift to me, which I was totally blown away. So it's an album that's signed by the former Stones guitarist, Mick Taylor, and it's called Once in a Blue Moon. And it says on the back, there were only 1,000 copies issued. So I've been playing the heck out of this and it's awesome music. But just tell me about like an album like this, Mick Taylor of the Stones. I mean, he gets together. Now I'm learning about a guy named Jerry Groom, who's doing vocals with him, and there's other guys in this band that I'm researching. But first of all, thank you. That was an amazing gesture, especially for someone like me who sits in a room here doing this interview with you, and I have a little napkin signed by Mick Taylor from the Troubadour in LA. So anyway, thank you for that. And just tell me about this album and how do you acquire some of these like really just obscure albums?
Well, that album actually came from a collection. It's funny. A friend of mine brought a friend of theirs in, and it turns out that she was the daughter of a store that was up in Oklahoma City that I used to be a sales rep for, called Starship Records. And I bought, she basically had some stuff. Her father had recently passed away, and she had just stuff left over from the store. And going through it and it was just like a lot of signed stuff, a lot of signed pictures. I mean, there's a signed Chuck Berry picture, wow, signed Buddy Miles picture, several records that were signed, so a lot of Japanese imports of some titles that you don't see that often. So just like every store, I mean, every now and then we'll get some stuff of like from somebody that's just like this incredible cache of product, and that was one of them. And I knew your affinity for the Stones, and I'm like, I get more joy about seeing someone like, holy wow, what is this, and to see that look in your eye was priceless. So it was my pleasure to find that and get
that.
Well,
that album's been leaning against one of the speakers. I've been playing this thing religiously just because I just love it all, and the guitar playing, and everything else. We're talking to from Sig's Lagoon. He is Tomas Escalante. We really appreciate him being on. You know, if you were going to advise somebody that's, you know, thinking about getting into vinyl, can you get in inexpensively with a turntable? Do you have to go high-end gear? I mean, you know, because you got the audiophiles who are putting thousands upon thousands of dollars into it. You know, how about for somebody who just wants to kind of ease into it, what would you suggest?
Well, there's a great entry-level turntable called Audio Technica, and you can buy one of those and a set of speakers for a decent, you know, for a little over a couple hundred dollars. But it'll get you exactly what it needs, especially if you're in like an apartment or something. It's just the right level that sounds good. And we carry both of those, but you don't, I would steer people away from buying the all-in-ones. They look great and but they don't do justice to your vinyl. They wear them down. And they aren't really built to last. So it's worth spending a little bit more money and getting something. And so you can spend a couple hundred dollars and see if you're into it and start with the use section and then grow from there.
And then you get down to places like Sig's Lagoon and you start looking through a lot of, I love the albums that are pre-played. I mean, right. I mean,
yeah.
I don't like when they reissue them and they make it a 2-album set. Cause you have to, you know, go and change the record too quick. But
yeah.
I understand the sound quality. So take us into the difference of, you know, getting original vinyl to the reissues now and what that difference is and the pros and cons of it.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.